Welcome to the So-and-So series, readings by early career poets.
Hello? Can I record you? Is that alright? Alright, thanks for coming. We haven't had one in a while. It's like early May, so it feels like a long time since we've done this. I want to thank you all for coming. A couple things before we get started. There's a money bag in the back if you care to donate. That goes to paying rent for the space for the month, and if any is left over, we pay the poets for travel and, you know, booze or whatever. You yell now, but rarely is there enough left over. So make it happen, and then you can yell some more. Other things. There's an email list if you're not already on it. We are moving spaces, so this will be actually the last time here at the Lily Pad. So 14th time at the Lily Pad is the last time. We'll be moving to South Boston, Southie, at the distillery, an artist's apartment complex. So yeah, so last one. It's like 15 minutes away from the Broadway stop, so not too bad. The next three readers will be Ravi Shankar, Schaefer Hall, and Cecily Parks. I think that's it. Kaveh, do you have a problem going first? Awesome. I asked the other two, but I failed to ask you. So we'll start. Kaveh Basiri was born in Iran and moved to the San Francisco Bay Area in his early teens. He has an MFA from Sarah Lawrence College, where he was the editor of the 2006 issue of its graduate literary journal, Lumina. He is also the co-curator of the poetry series, Reading Between A and B, in the East Village. You should all go to that. Kaveh Basiri.
Can you hear me okay? Okay. Usually talk loud enough that it might not be needed, but let me know if I... You couldn't hear me. I want to thank Chris for asking me, and I want to thank Sam, who came up with me, and the other Chris, and Ulrika and Bart for being here. They're friends of mine that from the Boston area. My first poem is based on the 99 Names of God, which is an Islamic gesture, and is included also in prayers. 99 Names of Exile. Adam and Eve. Afflicted, afraid, alien, banished, beggar, castaway, colonist, condemned, crippled, dangerous, dark, deportee, deserter, detested, different, dirty, disgraced, disinherited, dismissed, disowned, displaced, dispossessed, dyke, immigrant, ethnic, evil, exotic, expatriate, expelled, extraterrestrial, foreign, forsaken, fugitive, guilty, heretic, homeless, homesick, impure, infectious, inhuman, insurgent, invisible, Ishmael, Jew, Kashmiri, lost, malefactor, marooned, mysterious, nigger, non-citizen, non-conformist, other, outcast, outlaw, outsider, overseas, pariah, queer, refugee, resident alien, runaway, scapegoat, squatter, stateless, stranger, street Arab, terrorist, traitor, trespasser, unclean, uncorrectable, undesirable, undomesticated, unfit, unfortunate, unidentified, uninvited, unknown, unnamed, unrecognized, unskilled, unspeakable, unthinkable, untouchable, unusual, unwanted, unwilling, unworthy, victim, villain, virus, wanderer, witch, wrong, X, yellow, zero. This poem recalls my desire of coming to here and my experience of coming here. And one of the examples of that is that when I was in Iran, I used to watch this. One of my favorite shows was Room 222, which most people are too young to remember or know. And I always wanted to go to that school, and I was fighting with my parents, my dad, Baba, to send me there. So there's references to that also in this book poem. Already here. When I was 10, I was already here. Baba, you brought me here, to Rome, to London, to a new family in Tehran. I was already here, light as nimbus, sopped with pride, looming over everyone, studying dubbed American History, Walt Whitman High School in a living room in Tehran, ready here in the suburb of my thoughts, the genderless pronoun behind purdey of future. I was all Cabrillo, forging new paths, inventing countries, saving windroses. Here, my soft palms crumpled like sheets bearing blue scripted lines. Do the hands of the clock know the way like their brother compass? Ask them where they are going. I wake with the pillows fallen like ripe figs, leave behind the me sleeping and the me wanting to sleep. I hobble on the edge of my feet, stand on heel of question marks. With every step, roads I will not travel. Leaving home, a screened carb of exile, high with fixed wings, I was already a footprint for a star, a stain in the heaven, a tourist waving from a plane window. I met this guard in LA that was from once a general in Iran on the Indian army before the revolution, and this poem was an inspiration for that. Check. No one can explain the sense of comfort a uniform provides. This royal blue evening garb with its emblems and flags shining that his wife launders and irons each morning. The sense of pride with which he strides the corridors, inspecting the upright doors that slam shut in the right order, wearing their numbers as stripes beside the perfumed walls and tireless elevators, hastening like round-the-clock handmaids. Or the foot of the foyer where the crowned light sits in its throne and death-proof flowers stand in their pit, inviting visitors up the carpet to where they can wait in line for their names to be called. Nothing can take away the warmth of a gun nesting by his waist as he looks through each stacked floor, thinking that secrets are secured behind the white walls, that the regular air trapped inside that cannot scape the rooms, and the chlorinated pools and soft showers can perform ablution, that no matter what happens, everything is properly sanitized for the next day's cross-examination. Outside, under the familiar heat, he savors the respect the preened and prime trees give him as he strolls down the marbled sidewalk, watching their parade in rows with daisies at their heels like youth bands made up and waving, while the sweating bushes are mute observers to the procession from the side and the hung neon marquee salutes. He's under a rib vault at his desk like a hawk hunched in a leather seat, staring at the hours, expecting him to return home with memories of the amputated past sitting around him. And he's back to the nights of drinking imported scotch brought in by Cyrus as they play backgammon, practicing English for the next month's foreign dignitary visit, while they throw dice, betting on which number is up and who should be called from the cellar to confess loyalty in the interview chamber. Until someone calls, "Hey, you lazy Arab, go down there and help them check the bags. Didn't you hear them call you?" He packs up his badge, the scars inscribed on his right hand, the twigs of his broken English, his severed friends, puts them back in his pockets, and walks out the automatic revolving doors. I probably have to say two words in this poem. Mihrab, even though it's in dictionary, but most people won't know, is a niche in the wall where Muslim with prayer there, with prayer towards, or is it toward the direction of the Mecca, and Kaaba, which is the house of God that Abraham built, is in that location. And the other word is Azadi, which is also means freedom in Farsi. Just like we have the same experience in Iran, also the Shah during 2500 years anniversary of kings of Iran built the Azadi Tower, which also became a symbol for during the revolution, and where all the everybody, it's nearby the airport, so that's where everybody gathered waiting for Khomeini come down, and it's major ceremonies of Iran happens. He's talking to God again. My answering machine wakes me with my father saying, "Why do men so willingly give over their destiny to the states?" His snapshot in uniform watches from the bookshelf, the studio lit with its glare. The window gargles the night. In the yard, green tomatoes and cucumbers shiver under a stem. My eyes await the rain rushing up the steps to the door. They're gathering around airports, the runway and mihrab, the incantation of departure and arrival. Everywhere freedom, Azadi towers between us. I suspect he's sitting with chairs under the unlit chandelier arsenal in the dining room in Tehran. He needs me not to know. I say, I don't understand, but I do. Who is he citing? He wants to crack open the words, have them drop like pomegranates, detonating on contact, or this west wind that is raiding outside, ordering me to get out. I'm trying to practice learning to do introductions. So, in classical Persian writing, there's always a pen name that poets have. Hafiz, for example, is not actually his name. Hafiz means the person who can memorize things. And I think it was 7 or 8, he had already memorized the whole Quran. So the name also is often used as a taklahas, which is the last word in a ghazal, a word that poet then is talking to himself. The name that I'm using is from my grandmother, and the initial spelling of it with a Q meant friend, but because of the pronunciation and conversations of the conversion of Arabic to Latin in characters, which is a little bit more complicated and not worth describing right now, that letters changed to G, which then the word means not stranger and foreigner. Invention of night. Years before you were gone, I began buying the days in the backyard, in tiny chests camouflaged as darkling beetles, their wings latched. Now I can't find them anymore. I should have memorized the atomic number of sidewalks, the gender of doors on Pahlavi Street, walked through the news columns, read the vines scrawled on the brick wall. But I don't trust flat surfaces. From a distance, everything turns scenic. I know the earth is round, and if we continue falling, the afternoon's revolution never grows cold. The yellow oaks are wounded. Their fruits surround them like shotgun shells. I put one against my ear to hear the penance of the forest. I track the footsteps on the blackboard's plane, round up the shadows peeled off the branches. I must have been a great collector once. In the cellar hide a clutch of bandaged boxes with open mouths. Recognize them by their excuvier. Someone told me they identified you by your blue socks and porcelain inlays. The ants must have heard. They started to come in, found me behind sleep. Their excuse is that they cannot rest in the compound light outside. The fig tree in Kabul stopped delivering their violet fruits. The terrace watching over the pond is getting smaller. I'm back with a chemistry set, devising a playground for dew worms and Bedouin snails. Surely they can find you among the weeds, in the sand pit, the briary fleece of the hills. The joints of the fence swell and ache, Tareem. Why write of rain when you don't live by the desert? Conceit. The books erect the walls, ideas tread the hall, and white and smooth an egg perfect as math, rooms fertilized by art subjects. I nest in skull motel and read in bed. The jaw of headlines clamp and press my head and prostate. Warn, street Arab, you're suspect. I stand, won't break. I collect the dead, collect collateral for anti-war instead. But tap the belly, heart and snaps, invites the fright. A doctor's call unlocks my chest, displays a dummy womb, a solipsist. We spawn the same, the X and Y's we cite, profit from our rights. The East and West are spineless yokes that spill through clefts and lists. And this is my last poem. Should I steal some water? It was inspired by the recent Memorial Day.
What?
Memorial Day, recent Memorial Day.
Memorial Day?
Memorial Day. Everyone loves me. At the gate, they hasten to greet me, want to know what I bring make sure I pack correctly, examine me to see how I'm doing. My name is as usual as an article, as special as the Shah of Shah. My language, an arabesque English house where children wrestle in Farsi, fight over America. The flag of my country isn't a white towel, it's brown with a big nose. Where I come from, we hire others to haul our shadows. I bought my shoe black as a Sufi's bowl from the garage sale of history. I am Pythagorean. I believe in numbers, the orchestra of tangents and cosines. I attend to cell phones, emails, memorize licenses, credit cards, passports, passwords. My family loves divorces. My father divorced twice. I divorced my country twice. The dark in the cave of my eyes is so precious, they have designed software to detect it. My past is hijacked. Even God can't locate where I was born. My soul is a wreck. Everyone slows down to see what happened. They were auctioning my happiness on the offshores of eBay. My enemy care a great deal, know me well. My friends ask them about me. Somewhere in the East, my thoughts are being finished for me. My absence is momentous. When I left Tehran, a revolution swelled in my place. When I left Berlin, the wall came down. And when I leave tomorrow, the airports will close. Each morning, in order not to sink again, I have to bail the news out of me. My fate is a soiled soap dragged through continents. I do ablution with Old Spice. Weekends, I mow the backyards of my thoughts. My history unfolds without me. My failure enormous. They keep themselves busy talking up their accomplishments. The only fans who take my photos are DMV and surveillance cameras. My memories are forgetful. They don't remember me. My questions are like electrons. They know where they are, but they don't know where to take me. I know my religion is far. It's also Far East, and even Easter. Someone's always graduating from the campus of my dream, leaving and never coming back. My child is too old. It can't grow up anymore. I don't know who I am. I only see you watching. If you open my body, you will find the cypress leaves, the smell of traffic wear, the miscoded words of Hafez digesting with Cheerios, date and naan. I'm a parasite, a marauder, waiting by the border to pen you down. Thanks again, Chris, and thanks everyone for being here.
Our second reader is Malachi Black. He is the literary editor of the New York Quarterly. His poems have appeared or are forthcoming in the Iowa Review, Pleiades, The New Formalist, and others. He lives, at least for now, in New York City. Malachi Black.
Thank you, Kaveh, and thank you, Chris, and Allison, and Laura, too, and Dave, for driving me. If I go on too long, we were talking about this in the car on the way up, I want you to gesture in some way. It could be like a sad face or a middle finger, anything will do. Okay. Sam Starkweather might consider this a transcontemporation. It's a poem I wrote after reading a David Ferry translation of a poem I love by Horace. It's called To a Lady. The pebbles plunked like grapes or rain, pestering the window pane until you were awake. The moon slid its small blue hands into the bedroom, past you, or it used to, when the couplet of your shutters, so often closed and opened, was a butterfly, a flutter. Like the motions of your lover's frog's legs kicking off the covers, thick within your vulva. You learn to make out midnight's faces from its softly other shapes, to separate the thin string song of crickets from hoarse whispers from your mates, to guide an adolescent eyebrow to your collarbone, a place to sleep, a place. Lady, quaking naked, waiting, you were a station taking in her train. Grown old, now staling slowly, loafing like a winter coat thrown over a cold sofa, you're alone, and you can't keep a street cat. But the damp-handed rain cramps the puddles, smacks on punctured backs, and cackles on a standing taxi. Only dogs, walkers, leaves, and others' lovers lift their sounds in through your shutters. Not whispers, but the lisping winds, when leaves' husks scuttle on the street, a sweep of scarab beetles. This next poem is called Dandelion, and I think the line breaks are important in it, but it sounds a little fractured when I read it that way, so just bear with me as I do. She sleeps folded up like an old phone, number, no name, on a scrap of nap, kin in a stranger's calf, skin wallet, her half-closed hand in the shape of a shaved lamb. She is the seed, ingrown, alone inside an avocado. Her heart, a handful of feathers rubber-banded together, a dandelion dismantled by a breeze too cold to keep to the east coast. Starfish quiver in her head, slow rowboat floating on the bed. So I didn't really do that, but it's better. So this one's called Whale Song. Actually, do you mind if I...
What's the title?
Whale Song. In order to prepare for this poem, I spent 2 hours just whining to myself. Not for you. So. In the woods alone, he lives. A sound strobes through the mood of murky water. A mouth moves too, and bodies almost blue have brought their barnacles to burst upon the surface. In wind, then, they are nude. A crush of sea spray plumes before the oxygen can alter. The breath burns as it soothes, a cloud half in, half out of water. With the flicker of a fishtail now pushed down, enter into underwater and the onset of the shudder buckling the lungs. In sudden thunder, bones are bent to song. Siren, a frightened lightning strikes the whited eyes and siren. Shrieks will rise like steam heat swilling in the siren cries of stillbirth from a furnace. Siren, rise. This is a sillier poem called Mystic. Day seeds drowned in the darkling mouth of an oily oyster. The sun snuffed out. His helium-made head went red and spread out and against the bowl's brow of the globe. I saw it sloop there and erode, embarrassed as a broken bulb, and molten, headed west. Cold yolk is what it left. Behind the skyline were a yawning line of iodine, low tides toward a shore. It's night. The moon is half a cat's eye, quiet. The stars are low, lost gloves of light, and voices wet with dew are doving upwards for Orion's kite, blue fumes fluting in a damp June music. Limping in the lamplight is a man, his shadow tapping on a fire hydrant. Silent. Ode to the Sun. You repeat yourself like no one I know. Steadily somewhere, you roll unnoticeably forward, even now, showing. Your finger lifts the flowers in their faces by the chin, but you will leave them behind like blown-out beach umbrellas. You will always reach and extend. You will always try to keep me to yourself on Monday mornings. You will glare and I will go, but you don't care and you can't know. I will look at you too long and cry. I will wonder where you've gone at night. I'll fall asleep and dream an acorn. You are nothing but a breast, round behind a blouse of clouds built to be unbuttoned. You love, you share yourself, and you are always naked. You love, you show us how to take our places. You love, you cover our faces. Sunday morning in the handball courts. Joggers mingle with the fog. A face floats in with braces, slowly eats the breeze and ghosts away. There are newspapers near, a row of ducks, a soggy orange fallen from a truck into a puddle. One seagull screams, one feeds another. One seagull dreams it's underwater, and it may rain. But if it does, it's nothing but the wetness of our breath collected. Let it drench us. Let it soak your neck hair and your sweatpants. Let it set us hustling home, going sick and sticky cold, just to undress us. This is a Villanelle, first of two I'll read. It's called Vanishing Hands. Too long? No. I'd say we're about halfway done.
That's a joke.
With the first quarter of your reading.
Right, yeah. right. Woody Allen made this I don't know what it was. He was giving a speech or something. He was presenting an award to someone. And it was for career. And he mentioned at the time that he was 60. So he was pleased to deliver an award for career achievement, given that he was only finished with the first third of his life. From our mouths out snuck the smuggled tongues we had hidden in. Wetly our flesh met, then what sweat-breasted breath we blew from our mouths out. When tipsy whispers split our lips, slippery and unwincing, which we had hidden in. Your bedspread body, barely brown, had hands and held me welcomingly down. From our mouths out, those slow whole notes we'd stowed, we spoke. We bantered bone to bone and broke what we had hidden in. From cigarettes then, smoke corkscrewed, we poked our fingers through the rings we drew from our mouths out. We had hidden in. This is short. It's the beginning of something I'm working on, and it's much less useful for you than it will be for me in the future. I think, I don't know what it's called. Pardon? Yeah, thank you. I like the first part a lot, so let me know what you think about it. Summer evening sifts through leaves and drifts down to the street. Bits of black air break free from pixelated panes of space and cover up the sidewalk chalk, the garbage cans and trees. Through the kitchen window doing dishes, you will see far beyond the faint reflection of your face. Your mind will crawl to nightfall on the flat caps of its knees. What do you think, Sam? Yeah, it's two poems. This poem's called Intravenous. Car doors closing on the cold, spike night with muddy shutting. I rub my thumb, forefinger feeling for the cuddle of one button. Ear inside my eye, you hear white meteors collide above backseat jugglers and their one-night wives in Jasper, Indiana. You hear the moons of Jupiter untie the looping shoelaces of gravity as stars desert the sky, like roaches from the bare bulb light above my rusty bathroom mirror. An airplane rasping overhead, the ghost of breath upon this neck from some departed lover. This poem's called Morning Shows, is second to last. It's also Villanelle. The walls watch and no one knows. Your boxing books and won't be home alone again when morning shows. Next door they tumble under covers. Though there are lovers like a laundry load, the walls watch and no one knows their names, nor why they won't just go to sleep. Snub nose nestled next to freckled nose. Alone again when morning shows, you still think in summer of the snow and wonder how to package winter's clothes. The walls watch and no one knows. Your suitcase is too full to close. Upstairs, some furniture against the floorboards groans. That neighbor greets her love of ghosts. Alone again when morning shows, that neighbor greets her love of ghosts. Thinks rearranging things can bring gone husbands home. The walls watch and no one knows. Alone again when morning shows. It's my last poem. It's called The Puncture. It's a pantoum.
It was a while when
I was really interested in challenging myself. I still am interested in trying not to write the same poem twice, but I became especially interested in contortionist gestures as reflected in poetry because I'm a relatively inflexible person in both senses of the word. A vein is lightning, forked and full. Skin dimples like a sail in wind. Just ease the needle, squeeze and pull. It trampolines beneath the tucked in pin. Skin dimples like a sail in wind. A curtsy in the softest skirt. It trampolines beneath the tucked in pin. One worm immersing in its dirt. A curtsy in the softest skirt. A winged thing like a wrinkled gull. One worm immersing in its dirt. Heat swarms encircling one's skull. A winged thing like a wrinkled gull will sculpt a gust to hug its fringe. Heat swarms encircling one's skull. Add water, powdered sun. Syringe will sculpt a gust to hug its fringe. Afloat below the bone, above. Add water, powdered sun, syringe, like waking to the just dreamed of. Afloat, below the bone, above, when wishes wander from their well, like waking to the just dreamed of, the beat slows but repeats itself. When wishes wander from their well, and I sleep more than I should, the beat slows but repeats itself. A slumber pent within the blood. And I sleep more than I should. Just ease the needle, squeeze and pull. A slumber pent within the blood. A vein is lightning, forked and full. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Our final reader is Laura Kronk. She has published poems in Barrow Street, Convict, Lit, Lyric, McSweeney's, Notel Motel, and other journals. Her work has been anthologized in The Bedside Guide to Notel Motel and Best American Poetry, 2006. She lives in Jersey City, New Jersey. Laura.
Thanks so much, Chris, and it's great to be reading here with such excellent poets. I realize I'm also beginning with something that Sam Starkweather might consider a trans-contemporation. There's a Wallace Stevens poem, Loneliness in Jersey City, and I live in Jersey City, so I thought I should try to write a poem about it. In Jersey City. As the animal walks to the train in the morning, another animal pounces, and she shakes him off. Nose down, smelling the wet pavement as she goes, she gallops softly down the trail. She feels the eyes of the old animals on her as she passes them, always with their cold cans of morning soda, standing together at the mouths of their bodegas. Her scalp prickles with the start of a mild rain as she descends with a stream of other animals intent toward a train. The horse and the hound are one, the woman and the man, the animal and the animal. The animal walking home at day's end turns the corner and is pounced upon again. She flares back. The other animal retreats. The red door of the gray church sharpens itself in the hour before dark. From the cliff above the sidewalk, blackbirds peer down. The animal puffs toward home. The rat and the blackbird are one. The exhaust and the air, the home and the den. Sheared rock rises alongside the train in the morning light before it enters the tunnel. The animals enter the underground world together. The blackness of the tunnel is felt together, and the breaking into the light of the stations is felt together. The animal is riding into the metropolis with the other animals. She is snuggled down into a seat with the hard arm of another animal pressing her side. Some animals don't get seats and have to stand. In the metropolis, there may be those who aren't animals at all. The train and the trail are one, the dream and the mandala, the animal and not animal. On the train riding back toward home, one of the animals is missing a hand, an older one in a fine wool coat with a small earring in his ear. Another of the animals is young, with a small afro touched with red dye, a blue corduroy purse, and a padded appliqué jacket. The ornaments the animals wear are heavy and thick with the approach of winter. The coat and the hat are one, the waking thought and the sleeping thought. Climbing out from underground, into the dark, out toward the trail, the animal begins to follow her path home. Another animal follows her. They pass storefronts mostly closed, though the restaurants are open, and chicken bones sucked clean or scattered on the ground. She walks toward the darkest part of the trail, past the gypsy cabs, every other streetlight popped out, the moon behind a cloud. The dead moon and the dead streetlights are one. The animal tucks tighter into her coat. She tries to feel with the back of her head, back of her neck, her shoulder blades, her rump, the backs of her legs, if this animal following her is danger or not danger. No signal, and she walks quickly. The sense and the extra sense are one. In the deep cave breath valley of the boulevard, sleeping cars rest their noses along the sidewalk. Lit live cars break at the stoplights and the beastie plowing roars of city buses past the animal and the animal following her. The night air and the animals are one. The animal following the animal has turned. He took a side path. He didn't pounce or try to pounce, just going home. The animal turns on her side path and sees her home, a mountain of dens stacked upon den, each lit from within and warm. She sees her den. She senses her mate inside. She will eat and rest after eating and wake in the morning. And I have a question for Sam. Is a poem based on a movie also considered a trans contemporation?
That might be a new, yes, come to your
This is a poem I wrote after seeing the movie On the Waterfront with the young Marlon Brando. This is called Toward the Waterfront. To be too at the mercy of human interactions makes it difficult to be a student of human interactions. I want to be the soft hand of Marlon Brando, heartbroken, softly pushing the gun away. Because I want to be that much man and that much woman altogether, I need to have the power to punch through the window, to unlock the door, and also to be able to softly, softly push the gun away. He would be, as I would be, someone's pet. But I mean dangerous pet, exotic, a lion in the house. When you turn and give a dirty look, I'm too at the mercy. I've been all my life too petalish, not lionish enough. I've got to become, in part, that part of Marlon Brando that is so hard, as I right now feel the part of Marlon Brando that is so heartbroken, so terribly soft. This poem is called In the Middle. I awoke in the middle. Apple trees were rooted visibly, rotting apples and new ones amid exposed numerous roots. The smell of rotten apples and new ones was heavy and sweet or light and sweet, depending on the wind. When the wind stopped, the smell dropped in and was heavier. Though I knew a farmer could appear, I knew along with this that I was quite alone. Birds clamored in the way of birds listening to other birds with nothing lurking. My mother said instantly, though I thought I was alone, always pretend you're a tiny animal, you're prey. You should be alert in the natural way when you are alone. I considered her and went half back to being myself, my legs beginning to chill, my back against the knotted trunk, the sky holding on to its blue in the late afternoon. This poem is called Slaughtered Foxes. The hearth is boiled over with an awful stew, a foxtail stew cried over. The beautiful foxes, red and blue, so smart, it's a waste to have them this way, dredged in salt flour, mixed with potatoes, forgotten. There should have been a celebration. The daughter gone away was to return, young and blue, in the resplendent blue of the family dress. She should be here at the table in the yard around, but she didn't come. I've cleaned my hands and the bloodied cutting board. I'm in my gown, bound at the waist, proud, not some old mother thing, but expensive and fitted and stiff. The husband that we bargained for arrived, but when he rode off with her in tow, I stared. Suddenly she was stolen, vanished, changed, to be taken in by other people, trained in their ways. Her mother-in-law has probably taken her fishing in the unbecoming tradition of that family, or she's gushing over strangers' babies with that same surname. I'm singing to myself. The fields are all in bloom. There's nothing left to eat, nothing left to do. The foxes are furious. They look vicious, flashing in and out of the wood, betrayed as they have been by a mother in a mood. And my last poem is a poem that's new and in progress. It's called New American Forest. You seduce me with the food you gather. I seduce you with the food I gather. We don't waste anything. What we are building benefits from each choice piece as well as from each salvageable piece. We've walked into the new American forest, through the groves of hemlock dying with pests. Brittle and bony, we walk on the sticks they shed. We walk through the standing dead into living trees, through the forest and farther until we reach the stream. We follow as it gathers. We walk to the falls. We were mad to be in contact with each other. Now we are in contact with each other. We are in contact with dirt, with branches and leaves, with air, with sun, and with the darkness at night. As we walk the narrowing trails, pushing thorny branches aside, everything becomes denser, darker, more in the middle, less beginning, less end, more lost, clung together, more rising on wobbly legs. We slept in the open at first. Now we make a place for ourselves where we go. I know that I could swell with you, but you could also swell with me. Look, we've actually become thinner together, taking what we need, saving even more. Thank you.
I want to thank you all for coming out. I'd like to thank the readers for coming all the way from New York City, all three of them, or in and around New York City, sorry. Does Bronxville count as New York City?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, all right. Right. I mean, next month, like I said, we'll be at the Distillery in South Boston, off the Broadway stop. That'll be Ravi Shankar, not the Ravi Shankar, but the Ravi Shankar. It will be Schaefer Hall and Cecily Parks. Thanks again. And that's it. Thanks. Have a good night.